Hello and salam alaikum. I'm Shalina Jan Mohammed and welcome to Muslim Women Talk Ramadan, a podcast for Muslim women by Muslim women. Think of it as your Ramadan pep talk, BFF and weekly hug all wrapped up in one. We are now into the second week of Ramadan, so how are you all feeling, guys?
How am I feeling? I'm feeling pretty excited.
I'm feeling a bit anxious.
So I feel really raring to go.
And I'm feeling overwhelmed, underprepared.
I feel this calmness and connection still.
The serenity it brings to my heart, no matter what I'm doing or how stressful things are, it just feels really good deep down inside.
I've been feeling optimistic after the first episode, helping us map the road ahead for Ramadan and Eid. And what's really helped me this week is seeing this Ramadan as my own individual journey, and that each Ramadan is its own experience. In fact, this has helped me so much being calm that it's even got me through those crazy annual moon sighting wars about which day Ramadan started. But for me, the fact that we're still all together in this, no matter the differences, is something to be celebrated. It's been heartening to see the celebrations for Ramadan where I am in London. The Ramadan lights near Piccadilly Circus, the messages from our local council, and even the Ramadan messages on major train stations. My 9-year-old daughter Iman has been fasting her first full Ramadan, and it's felt both joyful and a big responsibility to support her through it. It reminds me of what we learn over the years about how fasting affects our bodies. "Why do I feel sick and why have I got a headache?" she asked after her first iftar, and then promptly fell asleep exhausted. I think we've all felt like that. But I have learnt from her about the value of resilience because she's picked herself up each day and started again. For me, the first week of Ramadan, the first one without my parents, and the recent loss of my dad just a few months ago has felt as hard and as mournful as I expected. Remembering their favourite foods or thinking of their joy at Iman and Hannah fasting. But it's also opening my heart to the need for me to do things differently, to focus on the kids, but also myself. After all, while I was caring for them, it was my act of service. But my body and soul also need care, which is why I've been thinking a lot about what we talked about in the last episode with Henrietta Savati, our Ramadan BFF, about how we go from where we are to where we want to be. She set us the following to think about. She said, along with your to-do list, write a to-be list. I tried it out, I hope you guys did too, and it was both easy and hard. I wrote a lot of words which I think are probably general aspirations. Be more God-focused, calm, kind, centered. But I tried hard to keep to just three, and which I feel like I want to focus on right now. And, ladies, I'm going to commit them to air right now. So here is my to-be list, inshallah. I can't believe I'm saying this out loud. Here we go. Be present in the moment. Be joyful. And three, to be inspired by Allah's names of strength, Al-Qawi and Al-Mateen, and his compassion. So it's lucky that Henrietta will be talking to us later exactly about compassion. And I'm also joined by, drumroll, the incredible Nadia Hussein, who is a TV chef and celebrity author. But first, we're going to talk to my daughters, Hannah and Iman. Assalamu alaikum, my lovelinesses. How are you doing this week?
We are doing great, thank you. How are you?
Oh, very nice. Thank you. Well, thank you for asking. Iman, now you've been fasting this week as your first full Ramadan. How are you finding it?
For the first few days, I've been perky and energetic, and it has got a bit tiring, but I've stayed determined.
Now, Hannah, Ramadan is also about mindset shift, and how has that been for you this week?
I think it's been really good. At the beginning, before Ramadan, I didn't really think that there would be much of a mindset change. I thought it would be quite the same as normal. But when it did start, I did think it, affected me more, and I felt like a wider sense of community. And, yeah, I definitely think I can really tell the difference now from Ramadan and normal time of the year.
Now, last week, you were listening to the podcast along with everybody else, and you heard Auntie Henrietta give some guidance about how we map our road during Ramadan. She suggested that alongside our to-do list, we should also write a to-be list.
So what's on your to-be list, Hannah?
So on my to-be list, I think more relaxed, to have like a feeling of more control over what I do instead of feeling like I'm unable to do stuff. So like when I'm doing, I don't know, cooking for a star, or when I'm getting things ready for the next day, to be able to have more control over what I'm doing.
And what about you, Iman? What's on your to-be list?
To be a more knowledgeable Muslim, to be more organised, and to be a better sister.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys on your journey to be. Final question, what's your hope for the coming week?
To be able to share and enjoy Ramadan with my friends and family.
I love that. Well, we pray we can all do the same. Thanks, girls. Looking forward to seeing how it all goes.
I'm so happy that we are joined by Henrietta Savatti, who I'm calling our Ramadan BFF, to help us go through week by week our journey through Ramadan. In the last episode, Henrietta helped us to map where we were in Ramadan and how we go forward. And she gave us these challenges of thinking about how do we go from where we are to where we want to be, and to write that all-important to-be list. Today, she's going to be talking to us about compassion. Welcome and salam alaikum to you, Henrietta.
Wa alaikum salam.
Now, as we progress through Ramadan, as we're doing through this series, we do have quite a lot of excitement at the beginning, and that, let's be honest, starts to kind of taper off as the body gets used to fasting. And we can be honest and say that we're trying to build our spirituality, but the physical fatigue has an effect on the spiritual energy that we have. And so what we're going to talk about today is compassion. Why did you choose that topic?
Well, One of the things that I experienced myself, and I have seen so many people doing this, is that in our Islamic tradition, we have countless, numberless talks and lectures and introduction to what compassion is. But actually, how many of us are able to do it into practice? And how many of us are walking with compassion in our bones, in our bodies, amongst, you know, all the things that we do? How many of us are able to carry ourselves with compassion? And compassion is something that I feel it's a layered experience that we actually need to learn. There are many of us, you know, most of the time, many of us in the room who were not brought up by compassionate parents, or our, you know, parents didn't understand how to do compassion. So we actually never learned compassion. And compassion is not something that we need to learn from books or through words or through education. It's an embodied experience.
I think I get that this is really important. And clearly as Muslims, compassion is so intrinsically woven into what we do. But it does almost feel untouchable. It's like this huge existential idea. Like, how do you even start on something like compassion? Where do we begin?
Yeah, it's a really great question. And you know, we talk about, I talk about big things when I break it down into three very specific areas. One of them is what we think about it, what we know about this subject mentally, what is our belief and what are our, you know, cognitive understanding about this subject. The second is how we feel about it and how we embody that feeling. And the third is what action do we take? And I think that's why compassion is so big, because compassion is all three. We have knowledge about compassion, and we have various ayahs, verses of the Quran that point to understanding compassion on a cognitive level and intellectually. I think most of us would do really well in understanding that. Compassion is also a feeling. It's that actual feeling in action. But it's also an action. What do we do when we understand compassion and know the feeling? How do we act upon it? How do we bring it into other people's lives and our own life, first and foremost?
What kind of behaviours do we start to demonstrate if we're not compassionate to ourselves?
Oh, well, it comes in different layers. But one of the things I often see people do is they put themselves lower than other people. when you are not compassionate towards yourself, you feel you don't belong. You enter a room and you feel you don't belong to that space.
I have that all the time.
Oh, I have it all the time. I still have to work with it because we don't look at ourselves as equal to others. And it comes from various sources. It comes from different experiences in our life. We put ourselves down. We compare ourselves with other people. I'm not that good. You know, especially in Ramadan, we look at how much Quran someone reads, how big iftars they do, how many juz they read, you know, how perfect their life is from the outside. And that really erodes our self-esteem and self-respect because we are not compassionate with ourselves. In the comparison, we don't look at... I just had a really interesting conversation with somebody. She said, oh, but they all look amazing and they do this and do that. And I said, what is it that you do that other people can't? And when we are not compassionate, we don't understand that we all have our strengths and weaknesses. And then if we are not compassionate, we are comparing ourselves, but we are also chasing perfectionism. And that's, for me, the big drawback of not being compassionate.
What's the first step then to trying to apply compassion to ourselves?
So first, I think it's really important that we understand what compassion actually is. And, you know, people have lots of, there are lots of definitions about compassion. But what I want us to think about is that compassion is a predominantly right brain activity. So let me just give you a little bit of background. We have got a brain that has traditionally divided into left brain and right brain, but we know that it's a myth, so it's no longer in existence. But what we do know about the brain is that the two parts of brain are responsible for certain kind of activities. Left brain is all about focus, analysis. The right brain, on the other hand, is incredibly different. The right brain has the capacity to look at the wholeness of our life, whereas the left brain can only see what's in front of us. So it's important that we understand that if you are predominantly left brain user, so those of us who work in the corporate world, and it's really important that we have that part of us, but the right brain is a completely different view of who we are and what we are. So with your left brain, you would be more likely to be judging yourself. With your right brain, you would be more likely to be compassionate towards yourself.
So how do we engage that right brain ability? How do we start on that journey of liberating our compassion?
It's a very good word because it's about liberation. It's all there. We just need to tap into it. So I always recommend to people that the whole idea about crossing over from one side to the brain to the other is really where human potential is. So if you have known yourself, I'm a very left brain person. So I like to know I'm a really good driver. I'm a fantastic map reader. So I know all those things really well. I'm good with languages. And that's a very left brain dominance. But I'm now understanding is that the right brain, if I engage with my right brain, is tapping into my being. I'm not doing anything, but I'm daydreaming. I'm thinking about faraway places that I would like to be. I am painting. I'm writing poetry. I'm working on something creative. I am perhaps looking at how to present my table of food today in an artistic way. And all of those things are very creative right brain activities. And if we understand the difference, then it becomes so much easier to be compassionate.
So are you giving us permission to be slightly nuts?
Yes.
And just talk to ourselves?
Yes.
To daydream?
Yes.
To have conversations with ourselves?
Absolutely. Because, you know, one of the hardest things to do when someone says, just be yourself, is the hardest thing to be. To be yourself, it's actually a really difficult thing.
It's quite hard to know who you are when
Absolutely.
You're rushing around.
Absolutely. And I think that's exactly what this month is asking us to do, is stop doing what you always do and try different things.
So the final question always is, give us the easy hacks. How do we start having this conversation with ourselves? How do we exercise compassion on our own selves? How do we engage that right brain while we're in this perfect environment of Ramadan? Give us those easy tips.
So I know listening to things is very important, but I'm also going to invite you to listen to yourself. Instead of listening to something or listening to something all the time in the car, listen to yourself. And as an extension of it, actually, why don't you record yourself sometimes and say your words out loud? If you're good at writing, you want to sit down and journal, have a conversation with yourself. Ask yourself, what do I think? What do I need? What do I want? And really listen. Tune in with, with a part of you that you hardly do, because I think there's just too much noise around us. And when we listen to ourselves, that voice is going to become stronger.
So tune out everything around us and listen to our own voice getting louder. Thank you so much, Henrietta, for your wisdom today and your top tips on how we're going to exercise compassion, and looking forward to speaking to you next time.
Thank you. Inshallah, see you soon.
That was incredible and insightful from Henrietta, and I'm really looking forward to taking her thoughts about compassion and applying them to the week ahead, and we can compare notes next week in the episode. Now, we are joined by the incredible Nadia Hussein. Most of you will know her. She is a celebrity chef, a TV personality, and the author of many books. And I would say, if you don't know who she is, have you been hiding since 2015? We are unbelievably excited and lucky to be joined by Nadia. Welcome and Assalamu Alaikum and Ramadan Mubarak, Nadia.
Walaikum salam and Ramadan Mubarak to you too.
Actually, I was going to say, we're a week in. Can we even say Ramadan Mubarak?
I think so. I think you keep saying it till you have eaten enough samosas to make you feel unwell, and then you get to Eid Mubarak and then you start on the samosas again.
And then we're into the cycle. All right, let's start with a quick fire quiz to find out a bit more about your Ramadan. So you ready?
Yep.
Quick fire quiz!
What is your favourite Ramadan food?
Samosas.
It's got to be, isn't it?
I just, there's no samosas. And everyone makes the best intentions. It says, we're not frying anything. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I was frying day one.
Chicken, lamb or vegetable?
Vegetables.
Favourite drink?
Favourite drink? Apart from oral rehydration salts right now, I like a good virgin mojito.
What is the hardest thing about Ramadan?
For me, it's physically, one of the hardest things is the waking up for sahur. I used to find that really, really hard. But now that my kids fast, I find it much easier. And my husband's like, funny how you couldn't wake up for me, but you're waking up for the kids. And I'm like, yeah, well, I've got to feed my kids. But the best thing about Ramadan is that energy that you get sort of day 6 or 7. You're like, hold on, I could do this forever. And you just get this weird energy.
It's true, isn't it? There is excitement, then there is anxiety that it's coming, this kind of apprehension. I have that. It's like, can I do it? How am I going to cope? And then you're like, yeah, I'm bossing this now.
Yeah, and then like there's something that happens day 7. It's almost that energy to kind of get you to the next sort of set of 10. And then the last 10 I find really hard.
What do your children ask you to cook for iftar?
So we have a really fun way of doing our iftar. So we have a laminated kind of strip of paper that goes down the fridge, and we take it out every Ramadan, and it has dinner and dessert, and they get to write what they want in those 30 days, and they can dot them around, and they could be, I mean, we've had things like jacket potatoes, beans on toast, it could be biryani, it could be khichdi and chickpeas. It could be so many. I mean, like, we've had breakfast for iftar. So many different things. And it's a really great way of getting the kids involved, because when they write things down, often they're the ones that cook it. So it's great for me as well.
Good tip. Your children are a little bit older than mine, so I'm taking notes of that.
Yeah, it's a really good idea.
One of the things you've talked about before is how women, and particularly mums, have the juggle. Do you think this is affected in any way by Ramadan, and how?
I think women juggle 11 months of the year, whether that's, you know, children, careers, you name it. And I think Ramadan is an added layer of pressure. It is. No matter what anyone says, it's a beautiful thing, but there is an added pressure, because you do feel like you're hosting a dinner party for 30 days straight.
It's really interesting that you talk about that extra layer of pressure, because one of the reasons that we wanted to create this space in the podcast is to discuss the fact that that pressure exists, and to try and, I guess, feel seen and feel heard that we're going through that. I mean, do you have any thoughts about how all of us collectively could take that pressure off ourselves?
Oh, my goodness. That's a really big loaded question, because I think, as women, I think as much as we know that we're under pressure, we take it on ourselves because we feel like it's our responsibility. Now, how do we take something that feels so huge? And it's a generational thing. Like, I watched my mum take on more than she could handle. I watched my nan do it. And like, I don't know if I'm the person, I don't know if I'm the generation that's going to say, no, actually, let's just divvy this up and and I won't feel the guilt or the pressure of being a woman and a wife and a mother and a daughter and all of those things. I just don't know how that's possible. But it's little things. I think it's small things. I think having a good circle usually helps. I think that's so important, especially during Ramadan.
It's lovely the way you talk about your mum and your nan. And I really loved when you brought out your book last year, Simple Spices, and the way that you talk passionately about getting the stories of your mum and grandmother told. It's something that I've also been writing about my mum and dad who both passed away, and capturing those stories. But do you have any thoughts about how we apply that to ourselves? Like, how do we as Muslim women write our own stories?
I've got my daughter, and I didn't think that we, you know, like, I had two sons and I thought that's it. My in-laws only produced the boys, lots of boys. And I was like, oh, we'll never have a daughter. And I had this beautiful girl. And I think that's when I kind of learned how important, for me, that was that moment for me, a pinnacle, kind of like really, really important moment in my life where I thought, well, this is, something's got to change here now for my daughter. And I think it's through our actions. I think it's really important to show them that, you know, I think it's important to show them that we can be role models and that we can take on huge, huge roles that other people don't expect us to take, and you know, and show them through our actions that we can be different and we can change things and we are the makers of change. I think that's so important.
I love that. We are the makers of change. I'm going to change my byline to that. That's fantastic. You're talking about your daughter, and I think actually she's a really similar age to mine. So I just wanted to compare some notes. So Hannah is 13. And you've talked about how at that age you don't want her to lose her big dreams and to have those big, bold ambitions. What can we do to help our teenage girls and our young daughters to keep those ambitions, to kind of keep that magic and that belief in what they can impact on the world?
I've seen that in my own, like, I've seen our kids are, so I've got, my youngest is 13 as well, so same age, and they're going through it, like hormones and mood swings and all of that, and it's really, really hard. And I think what's really important, firstly, for me, I think as a mother, what I've learned is to not have all the answers, because sometimes it's so important just to say, oh, well, I know the answer to that. And it's like this and it's like that. And my daughter is very, I mean, like, she is stubborn and she's sharp, and she would just say, oh, well, you can't possibly have all the answers. And, you know, she's right. I don't have all the answers. So what I've learned with her is not to give her all the answers and let her work it out. And I find it really amusing and really and quite, I find it quite endearing the way she kind of works everything out by herself. She talks everything out and she works everything out by herself. And I realize that actually I'm raising a wonderful, wonderful girl who is really, really sure of her own mind. And you know, don't get me wrong, I understand that there are lots of girls out there who won't be so sure and will be unsure. But I think it's so important to remind them to kind of create space for themselves, because they will have doubts and they will have voices in their head that will tell them that they're not worthy or they're not able. But it's about just showing them that you have to create space for yourself.
Do you think there are particular challenges that come with being a Muslim woman, especially in the current climate that we live in?
For sure. Being a visible Muslim can absolutely hinder your progress. I know, as a Muslim woman who works in the public eye, in the media, in publishing, how many hurdles I've had to, and I think from the outside, lots of people can look at it and say, oh, she's doing great, fantastic, she's got a career, wonderful. But nobody really knows the struggles I have day to day and the decisions that I have to make and how often I have to prove my worth. So that's really hard for me, because as a nearly 40-year-old woman, I am still trying to prove my worth. And it's really hard when I look at my daughter and I think, oh my goodness, I look at her and I'm so hopeful, but I'm equally really weary of the life that she has to live, because I'm like, oh my goodness, are you going to spend your whole life trying to prove your worth? And that scares the life out of me. But in the same breath, my daughter sees me do things that other women have not done. And she's seen me bat away the weeds to create the path. And I think that is something that is, it's invaluable.
What for you is the joy of being a Muslim woman?
The joy of being a Muslim woman is feeling like a queen. I know I'm a queen, and I know as a woman, I know what my place is in Islam, and that is a queen and mother. The fact that heaven is at your mother's feet, Like, only a queen gets that, you know. And I think for me, you know, that's how highly regarded women are in Islam. And I feel like a queen. And I think that is the best thing about being a Muslim.
I can confirm that I'm absolutely not crying at this end of the conversation. And finally, what is your dua for this Ramadan?
Everybody is at different stages in their lives, and there may be, you know, everybody is at a different stage in their faith. And everyone I know as a woman, we have dips and troughs and peaks in our faith. And I pray that whoever you are and wherever you are in your faith, I pray that this month you get that little bit closer to Allah and really find your purpose. Because every year that I'm blessed with a Ramadan, I find my purpose just a little bit more. And I pray that we all get many, many Ramadans to just really, truly understand our purpose and become closer to our Lord. And of course, my prayers are wholeheartedly with Gaza this year. I think it's hard. Ramadan is really, really difficult this year, knowing what's happening. And it's just, it's hard to eat, it's hard to sleep, to think that there are people out there who are suffering so, so terribly and still fasting.
Nadia Hussain, it's been an absolute joy, filled with some tears and emotion, talking to you today. I also pray that your du'as are answered, and I wish you and your family many happy samosas and a Ramadan Mubarak. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Well, wasn't that an incredible conversation with Nadia Hussain? Hearing her insights and behind the scenes of Ramadan at her house, along with some of her challenges, but also her inspirations. And I'm definitely taking away from her conversation that we are all queens as Muslim women. On the next episode of Muslim Women Talk Ramadan, we will be discussing self-respect with our Ramadan BFF, Henrietta. The girls will be back to update us on how they are doing in Ramadan, and we will have inspiration and insight from the incredible Dr. Kiran Rahim, a paediatrician and one of the co-founders of Children Not Numbers, a charity advocating for support for children in war zones and getting them the medical and legal help that they need. I'm Shalina Jan Mohammed, and this has been Muslim Women Talk Ramadan. I cannot wait to see you next time.